and welcome to the Business Standard Morning Show. I'm Nazia Iqbal, and here's a look at the stories for the day. Saying that follow the traffic rules. This is what RBI Governor Shaktikanta Das told financial technology firms, which have seen phenomenal growth in the last few years. The companies in the fintech sector are expected to have $1 trillion in assets under management by 2030. But their rise is posing a twofold challenge before regulators and the government. To turn India into a fintech superpower while ensuring that the firms ensure consumer safety. Our next report tells more.
Taking note of a host of complaints, the Reserve Bank of India had come out with the first leg of the digital lending norms in August. It allowed loan disbursals only by entities regulated by the banking regulator. The government, too, recently launched a crackdown on several illegal lending apps that were exploiting gullible customers, charging high interest rates, and issuing threats. Some of them are said to have Chinese connections. Earlier this month, Union Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman asked RBI to prepare a whitelist of digital lending apps to stamp out the illegal ones. And these concerns were echoed at the Global FinTech Fest on Tuesday, when Prime Minister Narendra Modi said that the fintech sector needed to work relentlessly on safety and reliability. At the same event and on the same day, Finance Minister Sitharaman said that work was on for implementing a common Know Your Customer or KYC that could be used for a variety of transactions across institutions. RBI Governor Shaktikanta Das also added his voice to the conversation, saying that big tech's increasing involvement in the financial system could lead to concentration risk. According to Das, potential risks regarding competition, market and business conduct, data privacy, cybersecurity, and financial stability needed closer scrutiny. His remarks come at a time when big tech companies like Google, Amazon, and WhatsApp are already deeply involved in the country's payment ecosystem. The government's concerns were also explained when Das said that the growth in digital lending during the pandemic had raised concerns, which were evidenced by a spate of complaints about usurious interest rates, unethical recovery practices, and data privacy. A day after these statements, the government's concerns were further elaborated upon by Securities and Exchange Board of India chairperson Madhuri Puri Butch. Once again, at the Global FinTech Fest, Butch said that SEBI was looking to bridge the regulatory gap in the startup ecosystem. She also revealed what fintech firms should keep in mind to avoid a crackdown. First, anonymity in the financial world would be an absolute no-no. Second, transparency would be key. Butch warned that if a business model, including things like the algorithm being used, was not open to being audited or validated, it would not be permitted. And third, the SEBI chief stressed that business models that did not allow ease of exit for customers would not be supported. Under the new RBI digital lending rules, which are coming into effect starting December, lenders must inform borrowers about all fees, charges, and the annual percentage rate in a standardized format. And there can be no automatic increase in credit limit without the borrower's explicit consent. The guidelines also require that the data collected by lending apps must be need-based and taken with the borrower's prior consent. Banks and lending service providers associated with them must also appoint a nodal grievance redressal officer to deal with complaints. Other reporting requirements are also part of the guidelines. The authorities have good reason to be concerned. According to the government, India has the highest fintech adoption rate in the world at 87%, which is significantly higher than the global average rate of 64%. Fintech companies are also expected to have $1 trillion as assets under management by 2030. In 2021, India's real-time transactions crossed $48 billion, which was 6.5 times the combined volume of the US, Canada, UK, France and Germany. Up to that point, that had been the largest absolute number of real-time transactions in the world. Furthermore, the country's digital payments market is expected to more than triple to $10 trillion by 2026, from $3 trillion at present. As a result, by value, 2 out of 3 transactions in India will be digital by 2026. So, where do things stand at present, and what steps should the stakeholders take to improve the situation?
And I think very, very simply put, for any entity that is regulated by our financial regulators, the RBI, the SEBI, or the IRDA, they have access to their systems, processes, balance sheets to figure out what's happening. If anybody is outside that purview, then the regulators can't really do much about it. And yet, the fact is, a lot of fintechs are actually in that gray area. They're not regulated by necessarily by the RBI, but seeming to be in this business of lending or doing shadow lending. And which is why the concern will be, if I don't regulate, if I don't have a view into what they're doing, how soon can it quickly become a social issue? The entire concept of installments or EMIs has become so common. It is also socially acceptable today. But can it become a bigger challenge from the lending space? Probably that's one of the concerns that RBI will have. RBI rightfully is concerned about, and they've spoken about it in the recent past as well, about they don't want India to become highly indebted. My wish list, I mean, can all our regulators, financial regulators come together and actually put together a India 2030 financial services vision and actually say, hey, this is why we want to work towards.
The government is only trying to say, use the process, use the mechanism, and even the regulator is saying that there is a system to be followed. If you follow the guidelines and if you follow the process, then I don't think there would be a major concern. But what has happened in the recent past, and we have seen that the entire machinery or the mechanism or the vulnerability of the end consumers was misused. We found that there was a lot of arm twisting techniques that were used, and maybe there were certain exceptions that came up. And that exception led to certain extremes in the system, and those extremes which led to some of the consumers, some of the industries complaining about the stress that they had to go through. There were a lot of compliance issues, and maybe some of the fintechs also became vulnerable in the process. And that is the reason why, you know, these guidelines had to come out. And I have a feeling that these guidelines over a period of time is only going to help the lending industry to reinvent themselves.
There's no stopping the rise and rise of fintech, but both companies and the government must come together to ensure that the sector presents an overall positive story while minimizing any negative social impacts. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman was recently asked what was needed to ensure trust between the industry, regulators and the government. Her response was that the industry needed to bridge the distance between it and the government and have more engagements with the latter's agencies. We should keep a lookout for success on this front, which could be a good indicator of where things are headed.
Technological innovation has been the key behind the runaway success of fintech firms. Similarly, the pharma industry too banks on innovations to survive and grow. Pharmaceutical giant Roche, which is celebrating 125 years of existence, also believes that its ability to reinvent itself through innovation was behind its success. Members of the founding family of Roche are in India. Business Standards Shohini Das and Nivedita Mukherjee spoke to them. Let's listen in to the exclusive interview.
So 125 years of Roche, if you have to describe the journey, say what are the learnings and what are the mistakes on the way, if you have to briefly say in like 3 points, what would they be?
So if we're talking about the learnings, we're talking about the support an industry has been able to give to health on a global basis. Our company is one of the leading pharmaceutical companies on the planet. We've been dealing with health and health issue for 125 years. I think the duration of 125 years already gives you an indication that we made better, that we made more good than mistakes. And I think that's one of the reasons why we want to celebrate this. We have a big milestone in our history, and we've called it Let's Celebrate Life. And this is what we've done for the past 125 years and what we hope to be able to do for the next 125 years at least.
So what do the next 125 years look like?
Oh, they look, I think, much more challenging than the past 125 years. The world has changed. We are quicker and quicker at taking decisions. Issues are also coming in our, I mean, the front winds are stronger than they were in the past. And the capacity of our company to reinvent itself on an ongoing basis, to be able to address the needs by the world and by the world of health, is something I'm looking forward to. I'm not going to be there for the next 100 years, but you know, this is something that we need to discuss and to prepare on.
And I think we can be looking back to the last 125 years and see how the company has time and again been able to reinvent itself, to stay relevant over while the world around it has changed dramatically.
So, family influence on the business. So how do you think you're able to separate the ownership and execution that has been a focus area for you for many, many years? How do you manage to do it?
Well, as you know, we represent the fourth and the fifth generation, and perhaps I reply on behalf of the fourth. The idea that ownership is an active role is something that takes a while to A, demonstrate, and B, to be actually put into practice. So I think it's very important if you plan long term that you should allocate responsibilities and roles in a way which is as clear as possible. The role of an owner is not the same thing as the role of a manager. A manager needs to go into the details of the implementation of the strategy. An owner, by definition, when it is family ownership, thinks in a more transgenerational way. So you need to be able to dispose and organize things in the long term. In order to be able to best do that, you have to have an understanding of the business which allows you to take the big strategic directions which are going to make a difference.
125 years globally. And the last 2 years have been, quite a bit of change in terms of vision and strategy. So I wanted to understand that at a global perspective also, what kind of directional changes might have happened because of your last 2 years' experience in terms of delaying the pipeline or a change in terms of long-term vision? You've been a cancer, diabetes-focused company primarily, but you're regularly coming out with COVID-related diagnostics now. So if you could give us an idea, and what would that mean for India as well?
So if I can start with the first part for the world, our strategy has not changed. The outside conditions have changed. We've been working on a strategy based on one side on diagnosis and the other side on pharmaceuticals for as long as I can remember. And the idea that diagnostics suddenly has demonstrated its value into how dealing with public health is something that's obvious for everybody to see in the management of the pandemic of SARS-2, COVID-19. We've seen the importance of early diagnosis for reasonable treatment. So we have not chosen to develop COVID tests before the COVID arrived. We just reacted into what the conditions were given. I think in general, the idea of saying one of our operating principles, and I think that's what I would like to underline, is go where the science takes you. So when our different divisions have been able to work together to create some sort of therapeutic solution to a health problem, we've gone that way. So when people tell you, we're strategically deciding to do something, well, let's reality make a check from time to time as well. You need to go in the sense where it's possible to do.
Are there any takeaways from India during COVID There have been certain innovations we've been making vaccine in India. So what are your thoughts on role of India during COVID-19?
Well, I think the vaccination program that India has managed to put together is absolutely stunning. This is so impressive how the country was able to get so many vaccinations in such a short amount of time. So I really have to say I'm deeply impressed by these efforts.
I think that's very important to underline and to also understand the purpose of our visit here. We come to celebrate, but we also come to have a look at what the world is doing. And very humbly, what's been happening in a population of 1.4 billion people, it's quite extraordinary. It's quite spectacular. So, as they would say in America, kudos to the Indian, because there's a lot of good stuff happening here.
Not just Roche, India's growth story is increasingly catching the attention of leading brands all over the world. Robust demand in its economy, aided by government spending, has also enabled capital goods companies to sustain strong order inflows. Experts remain positive on the sector and expect this trend to continue in the medium term. Our next report takes a look at key factors which make analysts bullish on this space. A 35% increase in the ongoing fiscal year's capital budget outlay has been a catalyst for the capital goods companies this year. On the bourses, Siemens, Thermax, Cummins India, BEL and HAL have risen 25 to 100% so far in 2022 as compared to a 14% and 2.5% gain in the BSE capital goods and Sensex indices. The government's capital expenditure push and the sustained demand momentum across industries continue to keep analysts upbeat on this space.
From a medium to long-term perspective, we are definitely positive on capital good companies. One of the primary reasons is government spending. Government over the last few years have been hell-bent on reviving economic growth and increasing capital expenditure. They are one of the highest spenders in terms of growth in the country. So that increasing would definitely bode well for capital goods companies. Apart from that, the whole Make in India initiative, Atmanirbhar Bharat, all these things definitely works in favor for domestic manufacturing, especially in the capital goods space. The third, of course, is consumption is picking up pace. All the high frequency indicators are suggesting that growth is picking up, especially auto, consumer durables also seeing reasonable growth.
A healthy revival in private sector spending is also taking place, which is leading to a higher intake in order inflows, analysts say. According to HDFC Securities, private sector capex has lagged that of government's expenditure during FY 2022, but it will now outpace public capex due to increasing spending across sectors such as cement, metals, power, auto, and others. Experts add that declining input costs are also lifting the prospects of companies, as margin pressures are likely to improve from the second half of FY23.
Also, supply chain issues in terms of chip shortage, other electronic components are easing out. As many companies have established alternative supply chains, this shall lead to strong revenues and earnings growth going forward. We expect sector earnings to grow in the range of 25 to 30% in FY23. Multiple re-rating is possible in L&T, KEC International, Vatek Vaba, KSB, Carborundum Universal, Cummins, Finolex Cables and Kirloskar Oil Engines, as well as Honeywell Automation. However, the sector is on the cusp of an upcycle given multiple opportunities, and therefore we believe that the sector could continue to command higher valuation.
That said, markets will react to the US Fed's rate hike decision and its commentary on the inflation trajectory today. Monetary policy outcomes by England and Japan's central banks will also be tracked later today. A new virus has just arrived in India, but it's not attacking the lungs of people. It is straight away going for their wallets. India's Federal Cybersecurity Agency has issued an advisory, and leading banks are alerting their consumers to stay cautious about the SOVA virus. Watch our next segment to know more.
Several Indian banks, including HDFC Bank and IDBI Bank, have warned account holders against downloading their mobile applications from any source other than the official app stores. They issued the alert after an advisory issued by Indian Computer Emergency Response Team, or CERT-IN. The reason? A new type of malware, the SOVA virus. A new version of the Trojan virus SOVA has reportedly targeted over 200 mobile banking and crypto apps and is stealing their login credentials and cookies. It can hold the information to ransom. SOVA is an Android banking Trojan malware that targets banking apps to steal personal information and adds false layers over a range of apps. These layers help the malware mimic the payment app. The malware was first detected for sale in the underground markets in September 2021. SOVA virus can harvest usernames and passwords via keylogging, stealing cookies, and adding false overlays to a range of apps. SOVA malware can perform several functions, like performing gestures such as swiping, taking screenshots. The virus has also undergone an update. Now it can encrypt all the data and hold it for ransom. The malware spreads through smishing. Smishing is a process where fraudulent SMS are sent to individuals, prompting them to share their details, including passwords. Once the app is downloaded on the mobile phone, the malware sends the list of all the downloaded apps to the server that the attacker controls. The server sends back the list of targeted apps to the malware and stores the critical information in an XML file. The malware and the server then manage the apps. So, after the latest updates, when a user tries to uninstall an attacked app, they'll be unable to do so. A message, "This app is secured," will be displayed on the screen. Download the mobile apps only through official app stores. Also, check the additional information section while downloading the apps and review the app details, number of downloads and user reviews. Another practice CERT-IN recommends is downloading the latest updates of the app and operating software provided by the device vendors. Additionally, download and activate antivirus software. Do not browse untrusted websites or follow untrusted links, and exercise caution while clicking on the link provided in any unsolicited emails and SMS. In case of any unusual activity in the bank accounts, immediately report it to the respective bank.
I'm backed by the nation's trusted bank, SBI, the banker to every Indian.
SOVA virus hides itself within fake Android applications displaying logos of applications like Chrome and Amazon. Well, that's all we have for you today. We will be back with more news and analysis in our next episode. Stay tuned. Thank you for watching.
For more news, views and updates, subscribe to Business Standard on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast and Spotify. Also follow us on YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn.